Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. It's now been a month since the November election, and both sides continue to analyze the results and plan for the next political cycle that culminates in the 2016 election. News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle talked with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling about the lessons from the election and what to expect in the next General Assembly.
As we look back, Tom, on 2014, a lot of people will remember it as being the year of the Republican wave. As you look at the year, what are you going to remember?
Well, I think what we really learned in North Carolina this year is that we continue to be about the closest state in the country politically. This is now three out of the last four election cycles where we've either been the first or second closest state in the country in the presidential or Senate race. So I think the lesson we learn here is that we're a swing state to stay. It wasn't just a fluke in 2008. And moving forward, we are going to be one of the key states in the country that sort of determines the balance of power in the country.
Looking ahead to 2016, we're probably going to still remain purple.
Yeah, and I think we're really headed for very interesting races in 2016 for the president, governor, and the Senate in the state. We've been polling the governor's race between Pat McCrory and Roy Cooper monthly now for most of the year. They're always within 2 or 3 points of each other, so we're headed for a governor's race that's probably going to be just as competitive as the Senate race was this year. The Senate race, with Richard Burr running for re-election, is a bigger question mark simply because we don't know who might run on the Democratic side. But what's interesting about Senator Burr's approval numbers is about a third of voters in the state approve, about a third disapprove, and about a third have no opinion one way or the other. That's the exact same circumstances that Kay Hagan went into this election cycle with. And as we saw, when you have a senator who's relatively low profile like that, that tends to lead to a pretty competitive Senate election. And we've also already found that Hillary Clinton generally has 2 or 3 point leads over the potential Republican candidates for president in North Carolina for 2016. So we're looking at another election cycle where we have close races for everything, and the eyes of the nation will once again be upon us.
One of the things that was also extraordinary this year, of course, was the amount of money that we saw poured into the U.S. Senate race, more than $100 million. I think 70% of it was from outside of the state. What sort of influence did that have as you were polling people? And I imagine that as we look forward to those races in 2 years, again, we'll see even more money coming into North Carolina.
Well, I think the most tangible effect that the money had in North Carolina was that the early negative advertising against Kay Hagan that started even a year before the election really sort of had the effect of defining Kay Hagan to the voters in a negative light before she really had a chance to define herself. We had generally found throughout her first term that voters were pretty evenly divided about her. After 1 month of those negative ads last November, she all of a sudden had a minus 10 approval rating, and she really had a pretty difficult time shaking that the entire rest of the campaign. I think Democrats obviously saw what Republicans were able to do to Kay Hagan, and I think there's a pretty good chance that you'll see Democrats try to do the same thing to Richard Burr starting who knows how early in 2015. North Carolinians really should enjoy the respite from the ads right now while they can, because they've been starting earlier and earlier every cycle. Started October, November 2013. Goodness knows how early they'll start in 2015.
What did we learn about the issues with regards to some of the legislative races? I'm thinking back to education being a top issue, and as you have mentioned before on our program, that dates all the way back to a very contentious 2013 legislative session. That was something that candidates really played on this year, regardless of how they voted on the budgets.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about some of the Republicans who lost their legislative seats. Out in Buncombe County, Tim Moffitt loses re-election. He had been really involved in efforts that really tried to take power away from local government and give it to the state legislature, and the voters punished him for that. And I think that's a lesson Republicans may need to take into the next session, is people trust local government more than they trust state government. Trying to take power away from local government, give it to state government, maybe not such a good idea. You look at Mike Stone down in Lee County. He was such a prominent proponent of fracking, which voters in his district strongly opposed. I think that's a warning sign that at least if it becomes a high-profile issue, fracking is not something voters are very happy about, and that Republican legislators have the potential to pay a price for. Tom Murray in Wake County, one of the swing districts most supportive of education funding, so much so that Tom Murray was pretending to be endorsed by NCAE even when he wasn't. I think that's one where you saw somebody lose because of the cuts that were made to education, and independent voters in particular really rebelling against those things. So even though statewide, because of the way in which the district lines are drawn up, Republicans had a decent year, there's warning signs in a lot of these specific issues and in some of these incumbents who lost that might have the legislature thinking twice about some of the things it does in the next session.
One of the things also they'll also be facing is a budget crisis.
Yeah, and I think with the budget crisis coming up, you saw especially a lot of Republicans trying to sort of pivot on education funding in the months leading up to the election, make it look like they were more supportive of it than their budgets had been. And what's going to be interesting to see is how some of those campaign promises, some of that campaign rhetoric ends up translating into governing. Some of these Republican legislators who just barely survived the wave and got reelected are going to realize that they do have to make education a higher priority in this session and money for it, or else they're going to be facing a difficult time again in 2016.
Let's talk a little bit about Governor Pat McCrory. He's going to be looking at the session and trying to figure out how much support he's going to get from his supermajority Republicans. Obviously, they're not all in lockstep with one another, but it's going to be a challenging year ahead for him as well.
Absolutely. And what we found ever since the famous legislative session of the summer of 2013 is that Governor McCrory's had a negative approval rating now for almost a year and a half. It's not hugely negative. It usually comes in at about the -5 range, something like that. But what really sort of brought him down was his unwillingness to stand up to the legislature when it was passing all that legislation that voters really saw as extreme. And that's going to be a very interesting power dynamic between McCrory and the legislature. In 2015, he's seen that when the legislature gets out of control, it has a negative impact on his political stock as well. And it'll be interesting to see if the legislature actually cares about that or if they just say, we're going to do whatever we want, and we really don't care what impact it has on you, Governor McCrory. But one thing we found in our polling is that voters think the legislature, rather than Governor McCrory, is calling the shots in Raleigh. And if that perception continues to hold and the legislature continues to be unpopular, that makes McCrory look weak. And that was a big part of what derailed Governor Perdue, was her looking weak. McCrory needs to try to avoid the same fate.
We never saw him use the veto this past session. Is that something that would help strengthen him in the eyes of the voters?
Using the veto, I think, would help strengthen him in the eyes of the voters if his veto actually survived. If he vetoes something and then the legislature just turns around and says, we don't care what you think, we're passing it anyway, that just makes him look even weaker than he did already. So it's definitely going to be a fascinating thing to watch in North Carolina politics in 2015, is these power dynamics between the governor and the Republicans in the legislature, and how much each of those groups really cares about each other's fate, or if everybody just sort of does whatever they want and goes alone.
At this point, do we see the parties sort of go off on their own path, or are they looking ahead to 2016? In other words, we saw a lot of extreme legislation in that 2013 session, and then we saw them move back to the middle, worried about what was going to happen at the polls in 2014. Are we moving to one extreme or the other in 2015?
I think you'll see the Republicans go back to the right in 2015, because one lesson they may take from the 2014 election, rightly or wrongly, is we made everybody mad in the summer of 2013, but then we were calmer in the summer of 2014, and voters forgot about it, and they didn't punish us that much. I mean, Republicans certainly lost some seats, but not enough to really put too much of a damper on their ability to govern. So I think you may see a lot of Republicans say, well, we can do whatever we want in 2015, and then we just have to be more careful in 2016 again. What they're counting on is the voters not sort of catching on that that's how they're operating, and maybe punishing them a little more next time than they did this time around.
And of course, we saw that a number of young people did not turn out for the midterm elections. It's different in a presidential year, obviously, but we're going to see both parties really try to attract that younger voter over the next 2 years. How do they do that?
It depends on candidates and having candidates that people are excited about. And certainly young voters were excited about Barack Obama, especially in 2008 and somewhat in 2012 as well. And you saw that young voters will turn out for somebody that they're excited about. And what's going to be really interesting to see is, can Hillary Clinton, at the age of almost 70, get young voters excited about her? Will Republicans nominate somebody who young voters can get excited about? Republicans actually have some, out of their large potential field of candidates, they have some younger, more telegenic sort of candidates, and it'll be interesting to see if somebody like, for instance, a Marco Rubio can get young voters who are mostly unaffiliated excited about him. But, you know, if we have a presidential election between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, that's the same Clinton-Bush election that we had when a lot of these young voters were 2 or 3 years old. I don't know if that is going to excite them about sort of going out to vote for somebody for the future.
And that really is an interesting demographic, and probably a good place to end this, is the folks really to watch in North Carolina will be the independents and the unaffiliated voters.
Absolutely. The percentage of North Carolina voters who are registered unaffiliated increases every year. That trend is really accelerating. Probably won't be 2016, but it's not going to be too long before there's more unaffiliated voters than anything else in North Carolina. And that puts the parties on their toes. They have to have a message that does more than just appeal to their party's base, because they are going to have to do so well with unaffiliated voters. And I think that means that the excitement's not going to stop anytime soon in North Carolina politics. It should be another fascinating legislative and election season.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.